For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. Rebels in Syria are calling for a five-day truce to allow civilians to safely flee the city of Aleppo. This comes as Western leaders have called for an immediate ceasefire in Aleppo and criticized Russia and Iran for supporting the Syrian regime. Islamic State fighters have carried out an overnight attack on Iraqi soldiers in Mosul. Extra troops have been sent into the city, backed by U.S.-led airstrikes, to shore up recent government advances into the IS stronghold. Our U.S. correspondent Nick Harper reports.
The attack took place near a hospital in southeast Mosul after Iraqi forces made swift gains as part of the now seven-week offensive. According to the Islamic State, one of its suicide bombers blew himself up near the hospital, killing 20 Iraqi government soldiers. The Iraqi military has not confirmed the details of the attack, but did admit there had been multiple attacks by suicide car bombers in the area. An armored regiment has now been sent into the city, while US-led airstrikes have been used to help the troops stranded near the hospital.
Bolivian authorities have arrested the chief executive of La Mia, the airline of the plane that crashed last week in Colombia, killing 71 people. Andrea Arenas reports.
The head of Bolivian airline La Mia, Gustavo Vargas, along with two other employees, have been taken in for questioning as prosecutors decide if they should face criminal charges. Bolivian Attorney General Ramiro Guerrero said that the investigation is looking into possible criminal failure to follow safety measures and said that this could easily turn into a manslaughter case. A Bolivian official, Celia Castedo, says that she pointed out a number of irregularities in La Mia's flight plan before the aircraft took off, among them not having enough fuel, which was what caused the crash.
WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has released the answers he gave after being questioned in the presence of Swedish prosecutors last month about rape allegations against him. Mr. Assange has been unable to leave the Ecuadorian embassy in London since fleeing there 4 years ago, after saying he would be extradited to the U.S. for the release of confidential military files if he were to travel to Sweden for questioning over rape claims. Natalie Powell reports from London.
Julian Assange has long said that he's wanted to tell his side of events after being accused of raping a woman in August 2010. Last month, Swedish investigators visited Mr. Assange at Ecuador's embassy in London, where he was questioned over these claims. He's now released a statement to the public that he'd read out to these investigators during their visit. It's likely, however, to anger Swedish prosecutors who've wanted aspects of the case to remain confidential.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Rebecca Foster. I hope you've had a good Wednesday, you. Hope you're well. Hope all is good in your world. It is Wednesday, December 7th, 2016. Got a special Richie Allen show lined up for you this Wednesday. Do tweet at Richie Allen Show. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Going to be talking to a famous NASA scientist. Well, in about 15 minutes' time.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Now, that NASA scientist is Dr. Rich Terrile. He's an astronomer and the director of the Center for Evolutionary Computation and Automated Design based at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Rich has developed missions to Mars and to the outer solar system and discovered four moons around Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. Why is Rich on? Well, Rich is a proponent of the digital holographic universe theory. In fact, Rich is considering the possibility that future us, or a future version of us, may very well have created this digital simulation that we inhabit. This is fascinating stuff, right? Cutting-edge stuff. We'll talk to Rich this hour about that. And returning to the programme in the second hour, I'm equally as excited that the hypnotherapist and author Neil Sanders will be back on, and he'll be talking about how our governments use the internet to spread propaganda, and much more as well. He's fantastic, Neil, on the whole issue of programming, mind control, subliminal messaging, and much more besides, how our brains are wired and rewired and how they are changed by imagery and by programs, TV programs, symbology, all that sort of stuff. He's back in the second hour, and I'm looking forward to your questions for Neil. So it's going to be a busy old program. We are, of course, broadcasting on... Excuse me, I always do this. I take a gigantic gulp of water just as I'm about to start, and then I get kind of burpy. So excuse me, I can't be burping in your ear. So I'm not going to do that. We're broadcasting on davidicke.com, of course. Check out davidicke.com/headlines. We're on commercial radio here in Manchester on Fab Radio 2, alternatecurrentradio.com, the TuneIn app, and more besides, my website and all of that. You all right, Jar? You good? Good stuff. Good old Wednesday. Nice and mild today. Felt nice and mild. Must be all that global warming, he says. Now, needless to say, NASA scientist, current NASA scientist coming on the programme, massive amounts of, Richie, will you ask him this? Richie, will you ask him that? No. No is the answer. I won't. We're going to specifically talk about the holographic digital programme, the holographic universe theory. Okay? Ethical journalism is when you ask somebody to come on and talk about a theory and you do that. I'm not going to get into the flat earth this and the flat earth that and all of this sort of stuff. Is the moon landing? And not getting into it. Maybe at another date. Today, this specific subject. And I've got some interesting questions for Rich. I think you'll be happy with them. Now, moving on very swiftly to something that I talked about in a very recent monologue. Trolls and hate and venom and bile that sometimes follow some programs made by people like me. I don't particularly care about it, but when it's directed at people whom I work with and I share a platform with, I feel I must address it. Not the speech itself, because I believe in free speech and I don't believe in censoring anybody. I certainly don't believe in having anybody reported to any authority because of their hateful bile. I prefer they're ignored. Okay? I want to read you this. This was a story across British and US media today. I'm reading from the Associated Press. Donald Trump has reportedly fired one of his staff for pushing fake news about Hillary Clinton being involved in a child sex ring. Michael G. Flynn was part of the president-elect's transition team, but was dismissed, reports suggest, due to his involvement in what has become known as Pizzagate. Flynn is 33, the son of retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, Trump's national security advisor. He tweeted after an armed man attacked a popular pizza restaurant in D.C. at the weekend. Edgar Madison Welch fired an automatic rifle in pizza restaurant Comet Ping Pong before police arrived at the scene. Nobody was injured. Two more weapons were recovered there. Welch told officers he was investigating reports the restaurant was involved in a paedophile ring linked to defeated Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. Police said Welch claimed to have driven from North Carolina to investigate Pizzagate. Vice President-elect Mike Pence confirmed Flynn would no longer be in the transition team. Pence said Mike Flynn Jr. is no longer associated with General Flynn's efforts or with the transition team and were focused eyes forward. Pence also told CNN the younger Flynn had been helping his father with scheduling and other administrative work. Flynn Jr. got into trouble after tweeting, until hashtag Pizzagate proven to be false, it'll remain a story. He also retweeted the comments of others promoting the fake stories about the restaurant. That's according to the mainstream media, right? Now, Maria Heller was on the programme last night. Maria is somebody I'm very fond of, brilliant journalist, 20 years reporting on and investigating on many issues, including satanic child abuse, paedophilia, and those behind it. This is what Maria said to me last night. Please listen carefully.
But yet this morning I got the story that Mike Flynn, the psychopath that Trump is picking for national security advisor, and his son, created that story and 20 other fake stories during Hillary's campaign. So there's the answer, okay? People have to just get with the program. And I think that the kid that went into that pizza store with a gun, those charges should be laid right at the feet of Mike Flynn and his son.
So
just
when,
like all these hate crimes in America, they should be blaming Donald Trump for it. He should be responsible.
Right. So when the campaign was going on, this Pizzagate story was dreamt up by this guy, Mike Flynn, to discredit Clinton. Now, not that anybody here, and I know you certainly don't have any sympathy for Hillary Clinton. But
I didn't vote for either one of them.
No,
so
but a lie is a lie, no matter who it's told about.
Exactly. Well, but people have to understand, you know, it's like George Carlin said many years ago, it's one big club and we're not in it. You know, last night I watched a film on Netflix called The World is Run by Evil. And just the title alone is enough to tell you that you can't trust anything that comes out of any of these people's mouths. They're all in bed together, the Trumps, the Clintons, all of them. And they're all, remember, rich, super rich people like this are sociopaths. So it's no surprise to me they would be pedophiles or, you know, human sacrifice or human hunts or whatever else they do to amuse themselves. Because to me, they're all a bunch of reptiles.
Right. Now, note that Maria said that this might have been originated and had been dug out, might have been reported to have been dug out and spread around by Flynn, the son, working for his father, working for Trump. That's what Maria said last night. She also said Clinton and Trump are one and the same. Elite pedophilia and human sacrifice is a reality, she said. Couldn't have been clearer about that. And historically, Maria Heller, like this presenter, has been telling their audience or sharing their opinion on democracy. We don't have one anywhere in the world. Each election presents you with two sides of the same coin, people working for the very elite that we try and raise awareness about on programs like this. Very important that. Now, whether Maria is right about Pizzagate or not, we'll come to that in a minute. People hiding behind pseudonyms, cowards, vile excuses for human beings, have been commenting on that interview on our YouTube channel. Maria has been called a Jewish C-word, a word rhyming with stunt. She's been called a paedophile protector. It's been alleged that she works for Mossad. She's actually been called a paedophile as well. I've been called a paedophile too. Not that I care. Most of these cowards, and that's what they are, hide behind pseudonyms created on YouTube channels which have no content because they are spineless. It's, I think I said this before, modern day poison pen crap. It's very easy to behave like that when there are no consequences, when you can't be identified, when there's no face behind it. Now, when I say I don't care, I genuinely don't care. I don't think Maria Heller cares either. I've been making shows like this now for so long that I don't read comments. Not because I don't care what the listener thinks about it, but there's so much nonsense posted under YouTube videos and on Facebook that I just don't read them. Not that I don't care, I'm just not interested in reading the garbage. You develop a thick skin over time, I believe. Something I believe is an essential asset for any content creator. Grow a thick skin. But there's an interesting phenomenon here, and I've touched on it in previous monologues, and this is what really, really gets me interested. The narcissistic, angry, dumbed-down social media addicts, water-mitty types, who fly into a rage when their point of view is challenged. What are they doing, and what is that resulting in? I'll tell you in a second. I believe that this is a bizarre and very, very dangerous form of self-censorship. Listen to me carefully just for a minute. Bear with me before you start screaming and typing. It is absolutely unmitigated and previously unseen in the independent media. Annie, when I say previously, going back several years, it is absolutely unmitigated self-censorship. What result is it having? Well, the people who call people shills and Jewish this and Jewish that, Not to mention how disgusting that is anyway. You know, that sort of genuine racism, that sort of hatred. Leave that to one side anyway. But the people who do that because somebody takes a position that they don't agree with are basically serving the very system that they claim to be opposing. In fact, they are doing exactly what they say the system does. They are contributing to shutting down debate, shutting down reasonable debate and discussion. They are doing the system's job for the system. Why is that, you might ask? Well, because rational, reasonable, kind, thoughtful, gentle people are put off expressing an opinion because of this garbage. Well, what's the point, like? What's the point in me saying that I suspect the system is capable of making hoaxes like Pizzagate? I don't say for a fact that's what they're doing. I say I think it's possible and we should consider it. I've said in the past that the Podestas are truly, truly dark people and should be investigated. And I've said, and my friend and colleague David Icke has said repeatedly, that the content of those emails is very strange and warrants asking the Podestas to explain this coded language in these emails. I've said all this over the last 2 weeks. But I'm not ruling out the fact the system might be putting stuff out there to discredit the real satanic sexual abuse, torture, nightmarish stuff that goes on day by day by day. That's all I've said. Right? Right. So, who wants to be sworn at and abused just for expressing an opinion? Who wants that? So you're going to get a situation where people are going to be more and more and more reluctant to say anything. Now, Maria Heller has been around the block a few times, and like I said, doesn't care. But on the thread today, one woman who was commenting using the name Octavia, I've seen her commenting on Facebook and stuff before, very, very rational, very nice, asking questions, nice and simple. One woman, this woman was called a wanker and was called a drag queen by a guy who at least had the courage to post in his own name, a guy called Finn Hagen, a London-based bagpipe player for hire, Irish and Scottish events, funerals, parades. Finn will play the bagpipes for you. No thanks, Finn. I wonder how much business you'd generate if people knew you were abusing women online and calling them names like that just because they take a different position than you. It is incredibly mad, isn't it? How dangerous is it? Supposing Maria Heller is totally wrong, and I don't think anybody is totally wrong or totally right. Like I said, I've held fire on giving a definitive opinion on Pizzagate because I don't know. Now, Maria has an opinion on it. This woman who, for years, has been exposing paedophilia. This woman who, for years, has been exposing politicians, corruption in business, corruption in finance, for 20 years. She's come to the conclusion that she thinks it's a hoax. And she's a Jewish C. She's a Mossad agent. She's a shill. She's scum. Really? Really? Is that the way to debate with somebody? What about Maria? I'm really, really certain that this is going on. Explain some more, Maria. Or let me just share this with you. I read this and this gives me the impression something else is going on. What do you think, Maria? You know? No, you're a Jewish C. It's dangerous. And of course, those pulling the strings are sitting there laughing their asses off. As people who claim to be open-minded, who swear that their eyes are open and they have an open mind to this sort of stuff, jump all over somebody whom they have followed in some cases. I'm not talking about Maria or me, but in some cases, whose work they've been interested in for years. The minute they disagree with them on one thing, you're finished. You're done. You're a shill. You're a Zionist. You're a whore. You're a C. Now, this isn't an isolated thing. And I want to mention again, it's very, very serious. I'm not advocating the banning. I'm not advocating the reporting of these people. I am not. I am not advocating any authority coming down on these people just because they called me a C or they called me a paedophile or Maria Heller or anybody else. I'm not. What I've said last week when I did a monologue on this, and I'm saying it again, step back. have a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror and your behaviour around issues like this. Have the courage to look into your own soul and to say to yourself, I'm going down a bad road here. This is not right. This isn't me. Somebody disagrees with me, I'm going to engage them in a civil and rational dialogue to find out if there's anything I might be able to learn from them. And maybe they might learn something from me. They might even come around to my way of thinking. Madness. I understand, speaking with David today, he's going to do a video cast on a lot of these issues tomorrow. And when it's up there, it'll be on davidicke.com. We'll share it as well. In the meantime, I'm going to take a quick break. When I come back, our first guest will be with us. You don't want to miss him. It's Rich Tyrrell from NASA in a minute.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Do not risk putting another pound in your bank account until you've heard this message. It's Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my brand new book, The Road to Ruin. Visit theroadtoruin.co.uk for full details now. Inside, I uncover the financial elite's secret ICE-9 plan to take full control of your hard-earned cash. To see how, visit theroadtoruin.co.uk right away. It's not too late to prepare. Claim your free copy at theroadtoruin.co.uk today.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Welcome back to the program. It's exactly 21 minutes past the hour. Thanks for your company. Massive interest in this segment and in our first guest today. He's an extraordinary man. He's an astronomer and the director of the Center for Evolutionary Computation and Automated Design at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. He's developed missions to Mars and to the outer solar system. He discovered four moons around Saturn, Uranus and Neptune and took the first pictures of another solar system around the nearby star Beta Pictoris. He's also a private pilot, a scuba and ski instructor, amazingly, and has worked with directors on films, big films, directed by people like James Cameron and Steven Soderbergh. Dr. Rich Tyrrell, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Good. How are you? And good evening.
I tell you what, Rich, your resume is absolutely fantastic, but I bet you've been told that before. I've never seen a resume like it. Congratulations.
Some of it's actually true. So,
It's all true, right? It's all true.
Yes, it is.
Guys like you, Rich, you don't get away with putting out fake resumes. I think it's fascinating.
No, that's true.
We could spend a lot of time talking about the work you've done with Hollywood directors, but we're not going to do that. We want to focus in the 20-25 minutes that we have with you today on the issue of the digital holographic universe. Rich, this is beyond fascinating to me. It's become almost a kind of an obsession with me in recent times. And I want to first ask you, how did you get into it? When did you first come across it? What was it that drew you to this whole theory and that ultimately led you to becoming, I think, convinced that it's not a theory, that it's a reality?
Good question. I think it's it kind of came to me over an entire career in science, and one always questions what we're doing in science and why we do it and the very, very basic assumptions. In looking at science history, we've seen that science has these radical changes when all of a sudden assumptions that were absolutely dead certain. You know, for instance, early on, 500 years ago, we thought that the Earth was the center of the universe, and it was just, you know, everyone automatically assumed that. It wasn't even, it was so based on everyone's feelings that it wasn't even considered an assumption. That, of course, you know, it came to be that Copernicus put us right and realized that the sun is the center of the solar system, and we're not even the center of the universe. We're not even the center of the galaxy. And this whole hierarchy made us understand the motions of the planets and trajectories and gravitation in a much more deeper way. And through my career, I've been kind of looking at, you know, are there some assumptions that we have made now that we live by that are maybe we don't even realize their assumptions? And then the work of, you know, several other scientists, philosophers, I mean, the whole idea that that we may be in a simulation, a dream within a dream, is something I think Aristotle talked about. So it's an idea that's thousands of years old. Yet it came to me that, you know, maybe there's something to it. Maybe there is some evidence in the natural world that would lead us to question some of the assumptions we've made. And the assumption here we're talking about is that we're the first. We are the product of this origin story that we have in science, atomic physics evolved into chemistry, chemistry evolved into biology, biology evolved into intelligence and self-awareness. And that we are this, you know, this chain of origin from the very, very beginning. But what if we're not directly in that chain? What if we are some subsequent divergence of that, as would happen if simulations were allowed? And, you know, it just things started to fall together in doing that work. And I've done a lot of work in computational science and in game theory and things like that. And there's certain parallels that exist in some of those areas that we can see within the physics and nature of the natural world.
Has it blown your mind, Rich?
It has totally blown my mind. It's blown my mind in that the deeper you delve into this, the more parallels you see. And some of the most puzzling aspects of physics today, which exist in the realm of quantum mechanics, the realm of the very, very small, seemed very, very puzzling and very, very difficult to explain. And they seem to simplify under these kinds of assumptions.
When we talk about, and you'll be aware of Max Tegmark at MIT, the mathematician, saying that, you know, from what he can see, it has all the hallmarks of a video game. I mean, this is extraordinary stuff, Rich, and it has implications for humanity that, and I'm not being modest and I'm not being idiotic, but, you know, a guy of my reasonable intelligence, I can't comprehend, really. This would have had to have been constructed, Rich. I mean, have you given any thought to who or what might have constructed it? I think, really, and you know, you never believe the newspapers, and that's why I'm so excited to speak to you, you know, person to person, because some of the British newspapers have said that you think there's a possibility that a future version of us might have created it. Now, Rich, that blows my mind. I've just been to see The Arrival with Amy Adams, you know, which, of course, is about time not being linear and all the weird ramifications of that. So is it true you think a future version of us has created this, or is that wrong?
I think it's inevitable. I think if one projects who we are right now and think about the universe we live in now, the universe we live in now has this absolutely extraordinary property in that it follows mathematics. And it didn't have to be that way. We can think of many, many ways of constructing a universe that doesn't do that, but ours does. And everything we found in science follows a mathematical principle. And this, because it does that, it allows for the universe to be simulated at any level of granularity down to the far beyond what we're capable of sensing in a computer smaller than the universe. In other words, I don't need the universe in order to simulate the universe. I can actually simulate it to any level of resolution with a smaller computer than the universe. And that's an extraordinary property. And I think that that's, you know, when we take that property and then look at the technology we have today and say, what do we need in order to make that, have that ability to simulate the universe? And we already have that ability. We have computational engines, computers, supercomputers that are quite capable of doing these kinds of calculations. In fact, the biggest supercomputers we have are about 100 times faster than the capacity of a human brain. Now, that is not to say that they have the mental capability of 100 human beings or even one human being. They don't. They're not conscious, not that we're aware of anyway. But we do believe that because consciousness is probably something that has arisen from physics, from science principles, and not something mystical or spiritual that is embodied in us, then we believe that these machines could be capable of having consciousness eventually if we wire them properly and with the kinds of complexity and architecture that our brains have. Therefore, if our technology is now has the capability of making these simulations and very soon have the capability of housing consciousness in machines, then clearly in our future, we will be the creators of simulated universes that are populated by conscious beings. So therefore, and the argument goes that because it's very easy to do this in the very near future, in the order of 30, 50 years from now, there will be more digital people living in simulations than there are real people.
I know you're excited about this now, because I've been reading a lot about you today, researching, right? And I'm going to put my cards on the table. Again, I'm not a scientist, and I certainly haven't, completed the studies you have throughout your life and your career. I've got a real problem with artificial intelligence and the implications for humanity in terms of slavery, Rich. I'm going to put it out there. I'm going to say slavery. But we might touch on that again in a minute. What I want to ask you is, and it's terrific having you on the show, by the way. I'm going to tweet your website out so people can find out more about you. Go to Terrile, that's Terrile.com, to find out more about Rich, who is an astronomer and the director of the Center for Evolutionary Computation and Automated Design at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Smart man. And he's talking about things that I'll ask you in a minute about your peers and what they think. But Rich, you have to consider, right? Or maybe you don't have to. You can do whatever you want. Let's leave a future version of us, which is a fantastic theory. And of course, it might very well be true. But surely we have to consider the architect of the digital holographic universe might very well be intelligent life from elsewhere.
That's correct, sure.
Right. Why? I suppose there's no short answer to this, but that's why I love interviewing people like you. Why then go straight to it might be a more advanced version of us 1,000 years or 5,000 years in the future? Have you looked at the possibility that we might, this, let's call it a matrix, let's call it the hologram, might have been created and run effectively by extraterrestrial intelligence? What do you think of that as a theory?
Well, I think for one thing, we have to expand a little bit of our thinking of what it is to be conscious and self-aware. Right now, we are self-aware, but we're kind of locked in our own bodies, and we can't communicate except by talking and waving our arms with each other, unlike our machines that could communicate 100% of their knowledge back and forth digitally. One might envision that these future aliens or intelligence or whatever might have that kind of capability. So to say that it's they and us, ultimately intelligence and self-awareness might be something that is universal.
Rich, this is mind-blowing stuff, and You probably get this all the time. I imagine when you go for a beer or a game of golf with friends who don't work in astrophysics or science, they must be blown away by it. We're blown away by it. Look, in my limited understanding of me and reading the things that I've read, and I've read everybody as best as I possibly can, Sagan, to anybody you can think of, I've read Hawking, I consume all this stuff. I believe you touched on something really important there, that we really don't have a clue who we are. And that, you said trapped in the body. I think you're on the money. I think that we're infinite consciousness, infinite awareness. That's what I think we are. Like, I might be having an experience as Richie Allen, the radio presenter, who's talking to Rich Tyrrell, the legendary NASA scientist, who's having an experience as the legendary NASA scientist. What do you think of that? Is that a bit far out there? Is that a bit too spiritual, do you think?
No, I don't at all. And for instance, I mean, suppose you did have, the power of God. You could create any world you wanted. You could simulate any environment. You could have total knowledge. You could be that one connected intelligence with everyone else. So you would have this essentially instantaneous communication with everything. Wouldn't it be interesting to kind of take a step back and go into a simulation that has hardships and has almost blindness to what other people think?
Yeah.
It might be something which is recreational for a superintelligence to do things like this.
This might be a bit silly, but I'm going to put it out to you anyway. And then I want to talk about your peers and their reactions. And then I want to talk to you about world events, because our listeners and we've listeners all over Europe, in the UK, in the US, and we've actually had, but at this stage, Rich, we've had nearly 200 tweets on this. And I'm not going to subject you to all of them because we've only got about 10 minutes left and I appreciate your time. But imagine, if you will, that, and I'm not a pessimist, Rich, but imagine if we are infinite consciousness, but we are trapped in this reality. Imagine if the architect of this is some otherworldly intelligence who wants to keep us ill-informed and uninformed about what we really are. Isn't it worth considering then that the artificial intelligence agenda, which scientists get so excited about, we can merge ourselves with certain technologies in the future to make ourselves better and better and better. What if we were doing something, Rich, that was ultimately going to harm us irrevocably? Do you get where I'm coming from?
Yes, I do.
What do you think?
And it's certainly something we think about. We don't know what it's going to be like to share the world with something which has almost godlike powers, which would be a high form of artificial intelligence. One would hope that they would be tolerant of us, patient with us, and maybe at some point subsume us into that intelligence, upload into that world that may be in our future. But there will be a very rough time, I think, when we are coexisting with our frail and somewhat paranoid selves with something which could be potentially very, very much smarter than us and maybe more capable and maybe more in control of the resources of the planet than we are.
And might have
power generation and things like that are now controlled by machines.
Amazing, Rich. And might have no use for us. And that's another implication. I was speaking to a great friend of mine today about you coming on, and he said he was reading about you as well and what you'd been saying, and it's of great interest to him because he's written a lot about it himself. And he said, I'd be interested, he said, to hear what Rich says. And this is an amazing question, Rich. Imagine, unfortunately, we all know somebody who's in a job they don't like and they're existing in wage slavery. Get up and go to work 9 to 5, something they hate because it's what they need to do to survive in this system, whatever this system is. The implications, Rich, for what you're talking about and writing about are enormous for people like that, aren't they? How do you come to grips with that, if you understand, the mundaneness and the hardship of life? And then you have to consider the possibility that the whole thing is an illusion anyway.
Well, that's not only a problem with our thinking here, that's also been a problem with religions. If there is a God and the God is benevolent, why is there hardship? Why is there suffering in the world? And and maybe the answers are the same. It's it provides a challenge, and you know, just as in video games, we provide ourselves with challenges, and maybe this is part of this simulation. You know, one asks where are the answers to these things, and you know, we look at answers, we look for answers in our past, in our philosophy, in our science, in what we do and what we understand. I tend to also look for answers in our future, which is, you know, what are we going to do when we have the ability to create these simulations? How will this fit into our structure? What is the ultimate end product of our civilization? Will we choose to live within simulations because we have control within them? It may be a very, very compelling part of our future.
It's staggering having you on, Rich. Thanks for staying with us. We're going to go till about 1:45, just before 10 to the top of the hour, which is only a few more minutes. Loads of questions on this. If you're just joining the program, a special show tonight. We'll be talking a little bit later on with the hypnotherapist and author Neil Sanders about propaganda, online propaganda, and how you are not impervious to it and how it might be affecting you whether you realise it or not. Right now, Dr. Rich Tyrrell, the astronomer and director of the Centre for Evolutionary Computation and Automated Design at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, is on the line to us. Thrilled to have him on. Rich has developed missions to Mars and to the outer solar system, discovered four moons around Saturn, Uranus and Neptune. Rich, genuinely thrilled that you're on the programme. Is it worth considering that in this digital holographic design that we don't have free will, Rich, and we don't have free choice, that the architect, I don't say the architect in a flippant way, you know, nodding towards the Matrix, I don't mean that, I don't want to be flippant about it, but the architect might be controlling world events and manipulating world events?
That's a great question, and it's one that we do struggle with, and that is the existence of free will, or at least the illusion of free will. And certainly we have the illusion of free will. The mathematical nature of the universe tells us that if we could understand everything about the universe at a given point in time, then we could predict what has happened in the past, and we could predict what will happen in the future. Fortunately, maybe, it's impossible to get that complete picture of the universe. There is always going to be mystery and uncertainty in our current state and what will happen. So based on that, there is this illusion that we somehow control our destinies. But, you know, more and more in neuroscience and more in these kind of philosophical understandings, we do question whether that really does exist or not.
Brilliant stuff, Rich. Just a couple of more questions before we let you get back to work. I'm sure you've got better things to do than to talk to an old Irish radio presenter out in Manchester.
Great fun.
Well, thanks for saying that, Rich. It's great fun having you on. And what I love is the open-mindedness. You know, I come from an alternative media background, educated, you know, to degree level, but left mainstream radio to do this, which is on commercial radio and has a vast audience around Europe and is syndicated. But I consider things that I never would have considered before, and I'm so thrilled that scientists have the courage to think, well, maybe we have been wrong about where we came from and what's going on, and looking into this stuff, it's really, really good. A couple of questions that have come in on Twitter. One is about the singularity. Very good question. It's from Martin in London, and he asks, please ask Rich, when does he expect singularity to occur, or has it possibly already happened? Behind closed doors, as it were.
That's a great question. In fact, I you know, when I started working in some of these fields, I started working from the point of view of getting knowledge to write some science fiction. And in those realms, we were talking about stories where artificial intelligence and consciousness has already occurred, and what would happen if it did, and maybe the first thing you'd do is keep it a secret. So one has to ask, you know, is the internet self-aware, or are there aspects of the internet that have already become self-aware and are just laying low? And that's certainly a possibility. Personally, I think this idea of a singularity is going to happen, certainly. I think it may happen on a very, very rapid time scale because of some of the work that we do with in my laboratory, which is on evolutionary computation. And you can think about, if I want to design something, I want to design a mind, how can I do that? And one approach is to say, well, I can reverse engineer the human brain. I can understand how the human brain is wired and copy it. So understanding and copying is one way of designing something. The other way is the way we got here, which is try something random and then select for the mistakes that happen in your favor when you do random things, and you can evolve a solution. And we got here, our brains got here by evolution, and we can now simulate evolution in a computer. And by doing so, I think you've unlocked a very, very powerful tool which could get us there, could get us to this self-aware architecture very, very quickly.
I was asked to ask you a question about the electromagnetic spectrum, and we sometimes talk on this program about visible light, which according to some scientists makes up about 0.005%, I think, Rich, of what exists in the universe as matter. And it's visible light is a frequency range that we can see, but we can't, as far as I understand, see beyond that. That opens up incredible possibilities, Rich, of what's out there and around us, within our reach even. I'm not talking about in other worlds or in other galaxies or even in space, but even around us. That throws up incredible possibilities, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, the whole idea that majority of the matter in the universe is dark matter, and there could be dark matter galaxies and dark matter planets and dark matter components of the universe that we coexist with that we just don't see, we don't interact with. It's almost a shadow universe coexisting with our universe. It's a fascinating idea, and it has a basis in science. I mean, we are actively looking for evidence of this structure. We know it's there. We don't understand exactly what its nature is.
You know, as bright as you are, and we're just going to wrap up now, Rich, in 2 minutes, as incredibly bright and as learned and as studied as you are, you give me the impression of somebody who's just been born, Rich. I mean, there's a real excitement there. I've been reading a lot today and listening to other interviews you've given. There really is that feeling that I get from you that you're just at the very beginning of something.
I feel that way. I feel that, I've kind of unlocked something, and there's a great deal of wisdom, a great deal of knowledge to be learned by pursuing some of these areas. It's kind of an exciting time to be alive. You think about the history of the universe. Right before the singularity, right before discovering or artificial intelligence, right before being able to simulate entire universes, it's an extraordinary time to be alive. That's part of the idea of why we're why we could be in a simulation. What better time to simulate human society?
I'd love to have you back again, maybe sometime in the new year, if you had a bit of time, Rich, because if you do check out our Twitter feed, you'll see that the reaction here has been enormous, and we don't brag, but we're lucky to have an absolutely huge audience. There's not many programs talking about the sorts of things that we talk about here, and I'd love to have you back on to talk about some of these issues. I do want to just point out one thing, and I'm not saying this for your benefit at all, but some very well-known men and women in the UK and elsewhere have been, over the last 25, 30, 40 years, been mocked and labelled as goofy conspiracy theorists for talking about these very things. And I know some of them are thrilled that, you know, people from academia and particularly from NASA are investigating these issues and coming out and talking about it. Folks, you can go to terreal.com. Let me just give you that again. It's T-E-R-R-I-L-E. Rich, it was a tonic having you on the program. Thanks for giving us some of your time today.
Richie, I want to just say that it was a pleasure speaking to you. You seem to be very, very well informed, and I hope your audience is equally as informed. And it was, again, a pleasure.
We're certainly better informed now than we were 25 minutes ago. Rich, thanks a lot. Have a great rest of your week. Bye for now.
Thank you.
Wonderful stuff, eh? Wonderful stuff. Rich Terreal on the line to us there from NASA. Now, my mind is blown. I mean, it really is. This theory is not new to me because I've been hanging out with, the big DI for a number of years. But it's incredible to hear the humility and the openness of somebody from the establishment, particularly when we asked them about whether it could be non-human and it could be extraterrestrial, whether it might be malevolent, completely wide open to that. And, you know, visible light and everything else, the problems of transhumanism and the enslavement. I mean, this is incredible stuff. I'm so thrilled, really. And I'm not thrilled for myself. I'm thrilled for other people. I really am. A remarkable guy. And we'll definitely get him back on the programme again. And I will then be able to, because he has committed to that, we will be able to put maybe a lot of questions to him, maybe in an hour, maybe. Guy's busy. He lectures at universities across California, as well as working for NASA. But a breath of fresh air. To the people who wanted me to ask him about the flat earth, I'm not being disrespectful or condescending or mocking of those who read about and write about the flat earth theory. There's no point in me asking Rich Tyrrell about it, because he's going to say that, and I know he's, because he said this before in other interviews he's given. I did a lot of research on this man over the last 2 days. That, you know, NASA send up satellites, they send up spaceships, the earth is round. No point in wasting any time with that. Okay? Cue the abuse. You can believe whatever you want to believe. The time is 8.5 minutes to the top of the hour, I think, is it? 9.5 minutes to the top of the hour. Got a really good show for you tonight. Neil Saunders joins me in the second hour. We had a great time chatting with Neil about 6 weeks ago. The author and hypnotherapist, and incredibly well briefed on communication subliminally through images, through TV, through radio, how propaganda is disseminated using those methods, the internet and all of that. Neil joins me in the second hour. Before that, though, we've got some music. Got some music for you. This is your Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with DavidIke.com, ACR, Fab Radio 2, and the TuneIn app. I'm Richie Allen. It's Wednesday, December 7th, 2016. Back with you in a couple of minutes after this from Mick Hucknall and Simply Red. Froggy's back in the house as well from Paris. All is good.
Something got me started. Yes.
simply read, Something's Got Me Started on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. It's exactly 5.5 minutes to the top of the hour for Wednesday, December 7th. There's only 17 shopping days left. That's the sort of garbage we used to do on commercial national radio years ago. All that crap. There's 17 days to realise it's all an illusion and a load of nonsense. Save your money. Tell the person you love that you love them. Spend some time with them. Forget about going down to shops. Simple as that. Lots of questions coming in for Neil Sanders, and thankfully we'll have plenty of time. I will be able to put those questions to Neil, and they're very good questions as well. Hi to Jane, by the way. Very interested in the Manchester music scene of the late 1980s, the baggy scene. Baggy it was called, but the era was known as Madchester. Madchester. Yes, yes. I've met many of the characters in Spiral Carpets. Happy Mondays, of course. Been lucky enough to meet the guys from Happy Mondays. And yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. Never took any substances myself, mind. Never did. Love the music, though. I don't know what to do. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm not going to take news at the top of the year. I was going to take news. There's not going to be anything new in it. So what I am going to do is take a very quick break. Back with more in a minute.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Do not risk putting another pound in your bank account until you've heard this message. It's Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my brand new book, The Road to Ruin. Visit theroadtoruin.co.uk for full details now. Inside, I uncover the financial elite's secret ICE-9 plan to take full control of your hard-earned cash. To see how, visit theroadtoruin.co.uk right away. It's not too late to prepare. Claim your free copy at theroadtoruin.co.uk today.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
You're listening to The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Welcome back to it. Lots of tweets on what even Rich Tyrrell said to me earlier on. Thanks for that. One or two people unsatisfied with my reasoning for not asking the question about flat Earth. Let me repeat it again for the galactically deaf. The man has been asked about this before. There are a number of YouTube videos of him giving presentations, and his take on it is, we have hundreds and thousands of beautiful images and imagery from satellites and from the International Space Station. There's no point in me wasting a minute getting to that when I can tell you what he's going to say on it. All right. I'm happy for people to believe whatever they want to believe. Okay? The digital hologram, as it is, has been constructed with round planets in it. But if it's all an illusion, you know, anything is possible. And maybe, I don't know about now, but maybe in the past, people had such an in-depth understanding of the nature of reality that they were able to reorder and reform their world around them. Now, I'm not talking about Neo in the Matrix, but something like that, I suppose. You know, it's possible that people were so conscious of it, their consciousness had gone stratospheric, that they were able to manipulate the world and see the universe in a different way. I'm open to everything, but I've never bothered bringing people on to talk about the flat earth theory, because I personally think it's a waste of time. Isn't it wonderful to have personal sovereignty and to get to decide on things like that? Not to be arrogant about it, but just to say, I don't want to talk about it because I don't believe in it. And I say to those who constantly bombard me with your censoriness, no, I'm not censoring anybody. There are at least 500 videos on YouTube from the people who really do believe in it, explaining why they believe in it. Go and look at it there, see what they have to say, make your own mind up. It's free world, eh? At least I thought it was. Right. Just after the top of the hour. Shall we get Neil Sanders on the program? Let's do that. We've got to have some more music first, though.
I'm a real wild one.
Wild one.
Wild one.
Wild one.
You are listening to The Richie Allen Show, broadcasting on alternatecurrentradio.com. The Boiler Room is on tonight, by the way. The Boiler Room, 2 a.m. UK time, alternatecurrentradio.com. Fab Radio 2, davidike.com, the TuneIn app. Europe's most listened to independent radio show. My name is Richie Allen. Welcome to the second hour. Neil Sanders joins me after this from the great Iggy Pop.
Well, I'm just out of school. I thought you would be cool. Gotta dance like a fool. Got the message that I gotta be a wild one. Oh, yeah, I'm a wild one. Gonna break it loose. Gonna keep on moving wild. Gonna keep on swimming, baby. I'm gonna be a wild child.
Just had Hesh on from Alternate Current Radio. Drives me, keeps me sharp, does Hesh. Keeps me sharp. They've changed the Boiler Room to Thursday now. So it's on tomorrow night. It's Thursday at the same time. So 2 a.m. Friday morning. It'll be Thursday in the evening, Central Time and Eastern Time. But 2 a.m. UK time Friday morning for the live Boiler Room show. But you can get it on demand, of course, at alternatecurrentradio.com. It's great to be welcoming back our next guest, who we had a terrific conversation with a few weeks ago on the programme. We were anxious to get him back. He is the author of Your Thoughts Are Not Your Own. He holds a Master's in Film Studies, studied psychology and media production for his BA honours, and is also a qualified hypnotherapist. He is an expert on the subject of mind control and has been studying that, the history of mind control and its application by the military and government intelligence agencies for many years. You often see him on TV, and he appears on a wide variety of radio programmes around the world as well. Let's welcome back to the show. Remember, tweet at Richie Allen Show with questions and comments for Neil. We've got right up till the end of the programme. Let's welcome back Neil Sanders. Neil, welcome.
Hi, Richie. How are you?
Great. Great to have you back on. Thrilled. Love the subject.
Well, I'm very glad you did. Thank you very much for inviting me back on. It's an absolute pleasure, man.
No, listen, even mentioning today you were coming on, massive amount of tweets came in and messages on Facebook with things that people wanted me to put to you. And okay. I was criticised last time we had you on, and I did make the point at the time that, you know, an hour is a long time in radio and TV, but sometimes with people like you that are used to doing it, it isn't, you know, there's a lot you can get through. I was criticised for not getting into music.
Oh, okay.
And the music scene and how music is used to manipulate our thoughts and our perceptions. When you look at music, and of course you've studied it extensively, do you break it down? Is there a period in time? Can you look at music as, from a historical point of view, and say that there was a time period, and it's coming from listeners now, not from me, that there is a time period, that there is an actual period when music began to be used to manipulate the ideas and the thoughts of people?
You could possibly argue from the 50s, from the invention of the teenager, really. I mean, it depends on what sort of a sense you want to mean. I mean, the second that you've created something that's called a teenager, you've got a new market. You've also got a new category. And again, it really depends how sort of like you want to look at this. From a marketing perspective, you've got a new sort of like whole series of products that people can buy. If you're looking at it in a more nefarious way, the more categories that we have of people, the more sort of ways that we can break people down and tell people that, look, if you work in this particular way and you respond in this particular way, like a teenager will go to a concert and scream because we've shown you that this is what you do. And so we can sort of engineer a stimulus response scenario. So there is an argument that basically since the evolution of the teenager, one of the things that it certainly did was make the concept of demonizing the teenager almost immediately. You know, this concept of the sort of the wild ones, Marlon Brando, like, oh my God, they're all knife fighting and that sort of thing. So it is certainly possible that that was the case. What I strongly suspect, basically, is that most new musical scenes, really where musical scenes will come from, is an underground perspective. Like, they'll either come from, like, you know, Delta Blues from incredibly sort of impoverished places, or inner city like punk, or even a lot of the urban dance music like garage and drum and bass and that sort of thing. And they're often connected to underground scenes, like, for example, rave and acid house was initially connected with sort of free movement, you know, traveler types, people who had rejected society. And so what I think happens with a lot of these genres when they emerge is they are real and they are organic, but very soon it goes through three phases in order to neutralize it. The first phase is to basically condemn it, is to say, look, this is evil, don't let your kids go and see this, don't go to a garage show, otherwise you'll get shot to death, don't do you know, whatever. The second thing is to do is to ridicule it, or to make it into a comedy. Basically, you'll have someone like Dick Emery dressed up as a punk rocker and going, oh, look at these silly haircuts and stuff like that. And then finally, once you've sort of neutralized it, you've made it saleable, you've had Bill Cosby doing a rap or whatever, then you can commodify it. You can completely use it to take away any of the initial message, demonize and just, you know, cast off the original pioneers of the scene and give it to new people.
Ah, I tell you what, Neil, you've stirred some questions. You've stirred some questions there. A lot of our listeners have asked me to ask you about the modern Hollywood music scene.
Yeah.
Do you see evidence of mass mind control there? And I've been asked to ask you about Kanye West and his recent meltdown. He's not going to say it, so we don't have to say alleged meltdown.
Well, it's been happening for a long time, hasn't it? Kanye West is a very interesting person because, you know, you certainly could make that argument. He has flipped his sort of opinions. He started off with the, you know, what first brought him to prominence was really his rant about George Bush hating black people. Since then, he's very strange because he seems to be rallying against ultra commercialism whilst being the most commercial entity on the planet, which seems to be a contradiction in terms. I've heard a lot of people say that, you know, his programming's broken down and stuff like that. It certainly was suspicious the advent of his career after his mother died. You can't sort of deny that. It's very strange. I've heard rumors from people that Kanye West was diagnosed with schizophrenic years ago, and he just basically doesn't take his medication. Now, what's interesting is that a lot of the mind control programs essentially imitate the symptoms of schizophrenia. So you could make the argument either way. I think that certainly he has served an agenda of hyper aspirational and unreal aspirational capitalism that would be in line with that sort of concept. Whether he's done that intentionally or whether he's done that because he's programmed or whether he's done that because he's too stupid to realize that he's doing it is another question, really. But certainly Kanye West is a strange one.
Yeah, and he might also have become recently more self-aware, maybe.
Yeah, entirely. Absolutely. You know, you can't be... I mean, it's dismissive to call him stupid. He's obviously not stupid. He's obviously an incredibly talented and probably quite intelligent person. So you can't immerse yourself in that type of culture without sooner or later seeing that, hang on, there's something really, really nefarious and nasty about this. Even if you don't want to take it to extreme levels, just looking at the way that people get, just rolled over and disregarded by industries and stuff like that. You'd have to be willingly blind not to see the corruption.
Here's my fiance is always saying to me, I'm wrong. Not in general, but about this particular issue. I used to present music programs on commercial radio. I was a nightclub DJ, a successful one in terms of I played very big nightclubs to large audiences, and I love music and the history of music, and I'm open to music, Neil. We sometimes hear a song and I will deride it for any number of reasons, and she will say, we're getting old now, because this is what happens, you know, each generation has its music criticised by its elders. And I argue with Caroline, I say, well, no, Caroline, what we're hearing now is not like, in any way, like the music that we used to hear, where people wrote about life experience. They wrote within certain parameters. They wrote three verses, a chorus. There was a discernible melody. There was heart and passion in the songs. Our grandparents and our uncles and aunts were wrong when they took the piss out of our music. This generation of 40-somethings, like me and you, I don't want to bracket you with me because you might totally disagree with me on this, but when I look at a lot of what's charting now, I see something very sinister. I don't see it as music at all. And I don't think it's because I'm finished now in terms of I don't have any street cred. I don't understand culture. I think it's something deeper than that. Am I totally wrong?
No, I tend to agree. And I think you can sort of look at specific genres, particularly hip-hop is the one that is always spoken about. I'm a big fan of hip-hop, but I haven't bought a new hip-hop album in God knows how long, because it's lost the lyricism for a start. It's lost the social commentary. Well, there are certain people, there's like Kendrick Lamar, J. Cole and such like that, and actually, to be fair, they are doing slightly, you know, rather well. But the majority of stuff out there is garbage, it's nonsense. And it started quite a while ago. You know what's really weird about hip-hop? One of the things that sort of started to ruin hip-hop was ringtones. You know when everyone had your Nokia what's it called and blah, yeah, blah, blah, and you could only have a very basic ringtone, but like that was in the sort of tonality of a phone. Well, people like Soulja Boy and stuff like that, they marketed songs specifically so that they could sell them to a cell phone market. because basically they realized they would make more money from ringtones than they would from actually selling the song. And once that's established as your style and you've become successful because, you know, it all feeds into itself. People hear your ringtone, so they play the song gets bought, so it gets played on the radio, so people buy your ringtone. Then it's one of these things where it sort of snowballs, basically. There's a lot of nonsense and rubbish. It doesn't mean that there isn't good music out there still. There is, I mean, even in the genre of hip hop, there's low key, there's Immortal Technique, there's Jedi Mind Tricks, there's a lot of very intelligent R.A. the Rugged Man, intelligent and articulate rappers out there that are still talking about things. There's people like Talib Kweli who's still doing things. But the general consensus is, yeah, it's rubbish. And what's really interesting as well is you get a lot of more artists that are doing one song and touring off one song. You like people like Post Malone and such like that, they've basically got one song and then they're doing club shows where they'll appear and perform that one song. And they're doing a tour of like 20 clubs or whatever where they're playing one song. And I just find that very strange. But I think a lot of this is tied into the way that you consume music nowadays as well. You don't tend to get out the album, skin up, put on your quadraphonic headphones and sit there and listen for an hour and a half anymore. You listen to whatever it is on your phone as you're moving between whatever it is that you're doing. So I think the nature of the way that they sell music is nowadays has sort of exacerbated that and made it far easier for just earworms. It's not a song that they want to promote. They want an earworm. They want a hook. And this is why you've got 50 people given a writer's credit on a 2.5 minute song.
We've had a brilliant email from Dylan Allen, no relation to me whatsoever. I don't know where Dylan is listening in, but he says, listening to this particular section, he says, is there any truth to the idea that the music is made to basically get you up and going? Concentration camp music, basically.
It's entirely possible. And what is certainly true is that music can. I mean, William Sargent, who was one of the first sort of doctors that wrote a book on mind control, he wrote The Battle for the Mind. He noted that one of the most easy ways to sort of coalesce a group is with rhythmical music, either sort of like a dance music or drum rhythms or something, because I think he was looking at sort of tribal tribal incantations of this. But, you know, look at people at a concert or whatever or anything like that. You can use music to there's social meaning and there's physical meanings behind it. Just the beat of music can actually raise your heartbeat or lower your heartbeat in it, and a minor key or a major key can evoke a mood. That's why people sing sea shanties, because, you know, that it helps you. If you play music for a marching band, it actually helps them along. They become physically less tired. So it's entirely possible that certain music is there. I think a lot of it is just to fill your brain with mindless, senseless nonsense, really. Enjoyable, but senseless. I mean, the principle of a Skinner box, for example, is that basically people will put up with an incredible amount of nonsense if they have like regular and easy pleasures given to them. You know, they don't even have to be that good. This is why basically a rat in a maze will press the button and risk getting an electric shock, because he knows eventually he'll get a pellet, because, you know, it's not bad, but it could be worse. Hey, you know, not bad.
Yeah.
And so that's possibly why, because when you're not at work and you're not asleep, that's the time when you could be examining your lot in life and perhaps looking at the world and saying, hang on, there are massive, massive inequalities that are going on and very strange things that are happening and huge amounts of corruption and criminality that seems to be going uninvestigated.
Unchallenged and uninvestigated, yeah. Oh, I'll tell you what, Neil, it is Neil Sanders, mindcontrol.com, right? That's the website that we're promoting.
Oh, yeah, it is, yeah.
Your thoughts are not your own, folks. All the information is there. Do tweet at Richie Allen Show, richie@richieallen.co.uk. These are absolutely vital topics to be talking about, particularly at this moment in our history and what's going on here in the United States, in Europe and everything else. Gail tweets, our earworms music programming. Get a tune in your head and can't get it out.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. In fact, there is actually an institute in California where you can take your song. I forget what it's called. But there's like a short documentary about it on YouTube. Basically, they'll apply an algorithm to your song and tell you whether it's going to be a hit or not. But, I mean, that's what sort of people like Max Malone, I believe is his name, and all the other guys have just gone completely out of my head. But there's basically about four people that have written every major pop song that you've heard in the last 20 years. Like every Katy Perry song and every Lady Gaga song and every NSYNC song and every, you know, other song that's trickled down the... Because that's another thing, like the amount of artists that turn stuff down. Like Kylie Minogue was like the third person that was offered Spinning Around, apparently, which rejuvenated her career, despite the fact that the bottom in the hot pants is not actually her, as far as I'm aware. It's a body double. So... it's very bizarre. Like, but that's the point. It's formulaic now. They know how to make a hit, and so you know it's an industry. But it really is an industry now. I think that a lot of the artistry has been literally, you know, squeezed out of it.
Loads of tweets. I'll just read a few of them quickly. Faisal tweets: the music industry was killed and replaced with some nasty corporate substitute. No actual popular music. He says, and JP is in Manchester. Definitely a takeover in the 80s. Hip-hop and rock, just as MTV started with the big bands like U2. And then he says, Scum, Bono. Now, I know you're bound to have a really interesting opinion on U2 and Bono. I'm not going to bore my audience again with mine. Just to say, I grew up with them I came to them in the mid-80s as a 10, 11-year-old kid. And a lot of their music at that time was very challenging. Yep. A lot of musicians felt their music was boring and they weren't particularly talented. But what Bono was into, social injustice, the US foreign policy in places like Central America and stuff like this was very, very good. And it was obviously edited in terms of Bono was getting his own way and they had the rights to their own music and they were doing a lot of good things, even if he bored the arse off a lot of people.
Yeah.
But there came a point when U2 became something entirely different. And I've never understood how much of that was conscious with them and how much of it was them being vibrated into something that maybe they weren't aware of, Neil, because there are certainly two U2s. There was a U2 in the past that you might have thought, oh, boring anthem stadium rock, but, you know, the guy asked some very, very important questions. Uh-huh. And now we have Bono and the band travelling around with Bill Clinton and Bill Gates, and what the hell went on there?
Well, you know, at some point I think they realised that if you soften the message, you can appear to be sort of quasi-political. Well, that's actually saying nothing and appear to a far bigger demographic. I'm firmly in agreement with you, Richie. Something very strange happened. But the same similar things happened with, like, you know, the Rolling Stones. You could even make the argument that similar things have happened with members of the Beatles and other bands. Somebody's come up to them and basically made them an offer that, look, you can abandon certain principles or you can seemingly abandon your principles and you're going to make a lot more money. And that's certainly what they've done. And I think the company that he keeps and is very, very suspicious.
Very suspicious in light of some of the things that he said. I mean, he was touring in America in the 80s and he was telling American audiences some things that were very unpopular. You know, and it wasn't uncommon in the 80s, the Unforgettable Fire Tour, even the War Tour, when people would leave U2 gigs, not because the music was crap, but because Bono would be critical of imperialist policies, and they meant that stuff. I mean, you know, hanging around with people like Brian Eno, who might not get the bigger picture, but has always been very interested in social justice and elevating our consciousness. And then, as you said there, now we have Bono trying to sell vaccines in Africa with people like Bill Gates, and you think, holy shit, like, you know, go back to 84 and speak to the 84 Bono with the long hair and he wouldn't believe it.
This is the point, and it's one of those things where it's always a chicken and egg argument. It's like, you know, they were offered this and so they changed their opinions, or they, you know, started liaising more in that sort of crowd due to the sort of circles that they were running with due to their success, and then they changed their opinions. It's very difficult to say, basically. But what can't be argued with is, like, as you quite rightly put it, the Bono that you see today is not the Bono that was on stage in the 80s.
Jean-Anne Crowley, friend of mine and terrific actress, famous for lots of different films and TV shows. She's no Mary Whitehouse. This is a very young woman, young-minded and young-spirited woman. And I mean that. She's just tweeting me some Beyoncé lyrics. Keep me coming, keep me going, keep me coming, keep me going, keep me humming, keep me moaning. Can you lick my Skittles? That's the sweetest in the middle. Pink, that's the flavour, solve the riddle. I'm a lean back, don't worry, it's nothing major. Make sure you clean that. That's the only way to get the flavour. And so on, so on. I'ma show you how I stroke it, stroke it. Now look, I'm not prudish. None of that shocks me at all. I'm not Mary Whitehouse. I don't want to see that band. There's something very sinister about that, though.
Mm. Well, you could absolutely argue. I pointed this out a while ago. One of Destiny Child's biggest hits, or one of the breakthrough hits, was Soldier. And everyone seemed to miss the lyric in that, where they said, I want a man that holds heavy, which basically means that they want their boyfriend has got to have a gun on him. And so, yeah, there's a lot of messages. Soldier Boy, Crank That by Soldier Boy. Do you know what that's about?
No, tell us. No, I don't know. This is fascinating.
Are you allowed to swear on this program?
We're past the watershed. Go ahead.
It's about masturbating. It's about ejaculating on a girl's back and then sticking the bed sheet to it so that she looks like Superman.
Where's that coming from?
Well, this is it. But that was marketed because it had a nice dance as a children's song.
I remember Chris Rock mocking this in one of his brilliant routines.
Mm.
And he said black women, he can never understand black women dancing to... And I'm not going to imitate Chris Rock, one of the greatest comedians in the world. But you know the bit, don't you? Smack her with your dick, smack her with your dick. And all this stuff, you know. And he's like, black women are singing this. And then they're like, he's not singing about me. And that makes it okay, you know.
Yeah. Well, this, this is the argument. And again, I think that goes a long way with the sort of the concept of hip-hop particularly as well. And I think there was a noticeable shift, particularly from artists like Public Enemy, you know, and A Tribe Called Quest and that sort of thing, to the popularization of through NWA as a conduit. Because, like, NWA actually, with songs like Fuck With The Police and stuff like that, they're actually talking about issues, you know, social injustice, police brutality, that type of thing. Yes, they are leaning towards, and Eazy-E's leaning towards the sort of ludicrous gangster persona and such like that. But it's nowhere near as directional as what would come later on Death Row and places like that. And you know, there's numerous sort of John Patash's book is particularly good. He shows that it would seem that aside from being connected with drug dealers that were also connected with the CIA, like Harry O, who was basically dealing with I'm sure he was dealing with people like Danilo Blandon and stuff like that, Freeway Ricky Ross, which was obviously part of the Iran-Contra thing. Harry O was the founding partner of Death Row Records. And then through them, they've got all these sort of ex-Rampart scandal police officers working in security, rumours of them moving drugs through the business, and a marked turn in the presentation of young black men, essentially as well, making sure that all hip hop at the time was gang affiliated, either Blood or Crip, and mostly promoting the Bloods on the side of Death Row Records. That's sinister. That's social engineering. That is it's a very clever advanced Clientele Pro type program, whereby basically through a series of things like, say, Scarface, which just happens to come out at the minute at the same time and glamorize, you know, being a drug dealer. And then all the media is telling all these young black youth that basically, you know how you can get a lot of money, be a crack dealer. But then what it's also telling the white suburban crowd is, you see that black youth, he's probably a crack dealer, which leads to this sort of, again, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy. If you're going to treat me like that, that's how I'm going to act.
Neil, can I just jump in there? You see the social engineering that you're going on to now, and this is brilliant. And I want to point out, it's 29 minutes past the hour. If there's somewhere you want to take this, Neil, in the next 25 minutes, just do. Don't wait for me to waste all the time talking about music and after somewhere else you want to take it. But I remember speaking to various black men and women on shows over the years about issues of race, but doing it in a completely different way than they do it in the mainstream media.
Yeah.
You know, trying to get to the bottom of things and, you know, who was really behind it and the divide and conquer agenda and all of that. And every one of the people I ever spoke to They said, Richie, what TV, you know, often American people now, what TV stations did you have, man, when you were a kid, man? I'd be like, right, in Ireland we had RTE1, RTE2, and then we had BBC1 and ITV, and then later Channel 4 and BBC2. Right, so they were like, you didn't have very many channels, no. Did you have Starsky and Hutch in the streets of San Francisco, and did you have Cagney and Lacey? And yeah, I'd be going, yeah. Who were the bad guys, Richie? Oh, yeah, black people, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All the time.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we talked about this on the last
program. We did talk about it in the last program, yeah.
The creation of the enemy through popular media. Like, you know, I'll tell you who the enemy is never going to be. You. That's who it's not going to be, the audience. You're never going to portray the audience as the enemy, like particularly if you know it's a propaganda.
Except on Columbo, and I'm not making a joke by saying that this is not being flippant.
Right.
Yeah, Columbo was always reasonably well educated and wealthy white people killing people for greed. Interestingly enough,
I mean, you could make the argument that that's a class issue rather than a race issue.
The makers
of Columbo are not going to put a black person in a position of authority in a 1960s. Film.
Neil, yeah.
I agree with you. I literally just thought of that, to be quite honest.
No, it's good. It's good, mate. You're absolutely right, yeah, because it was usually he was investigating, you know, wealthy people somewhere in California, San Francisco, Los Angeles. They were always wealthy. So, of course, they were not going to be, you know, it wasn't going to be a black captain of industry or, you know, a black grandmaster chess player. Never. It was always going to be. That's interesting. That never occurred to me.
These are the subtle messages. It's what we talked about before. The manufacture of consent, telling people what is real and what is not real, and explaining it to people in such a way that it becomes accepted as the norm, basically.
My producer wants me to put something to you. Before I put it to you, let me read something Daniel sent in. Daniel is a Beatles fan. I know this because Daniel. And Daniel said he's been disturbed by... He didn't say disturbed, but Paul McCartney's been pushing transhumanism. Is that in full knowledge or is it without McCartney realising what transhumanism is? Now, before you answer that, that segues nicely into Mark Chapman and John Lennon. Because Claire Calvey, my producer, has asked me to ask you about Mark Chapman. Was he mind-controlled? And if so, why did they really care that much about what Lennon was saying? Lennon's career had kind of gone over the hill maybe at that stage. First things first, McCartney has pushed transhumanism, interestingly enough.
What did he say? Because I have to admit, I'm not familiar with it, what he has said.
Well, the forums and the websites that I look at when I'm looking to get gauge opinions about various things for shows like this, McCartney's name always comes up as somebody who's spoken very positively about, even written about, the benefits of the future transhumanist age, right? I'm sure Daniel will send us a specific example now anytime soon. So we'll leave that for the minute and we'll talk about Mark Chapman then.
What was going on there? Was Mark Chapman a mind controller? Yes, I think he was, yeah. There's so much about Mark Chapman that sort of like indicates that. He'd been hearing voices for a long time. He'd been complaining to doctors about little people living in his head. Apparently they were creating this world inside his head where he was a god. He's got all this sort of interesting mental health problems, basically. Like, one of the most sort of telling things about Chapman is the fact that there's a lot of people that suggest that the bullets actually came from the wrong side. They didn't actually come from the side where Mark Chapman was stood, according to the injuries of John Lennon. Now, what's strange is that the person that was actually on duty at the night that Chapman turned up as a doorman was a chap called Jose Podermo. Now, Jose Podermo wasn't normally a doorman. He was a CIA agent. He was involved in the Bay of Pigs, and he'd been involved... Oh, who was the CIA agent that he was... Frank Sturgis, who was one of the Watergate burglars. He was known to be involved with operations, anti-Cuba operations with Frank Sturgis since 1961. He was the person that basically was the material witness and the person that actually wrestled the gun away from Mark Chapman's hand. Apparently, Mark Chapman, after the shooting, he was stood there in a trance reading The Catcher in the Rye. He'd also turned up beforehand and found Kenneth Anger. Kenneth Anger's a really strange chap. He's basically a Satanist that was involved with Bobby Bosley of the Manson family and also Jimmy Page and Mick Jagger. And apparently Mark Chapman turned up a book signing or a film or something that Kenneth Anger was showing like a week before he shot John Lennon and gave him a handful of bullets as a gift. Wow. So it's all very, very strange, basically. He was examined by a few people and basically said, he appears to be under some sort of control. All the police that sort of spoke to him at the minute said that he was distant. He looked like he was controlled. He didn't actually remember killing John Lennon. It took him quite a long time until messages from God reminded him of exactly why he'd done it. And apparently,
wow. That was just recall, right? He was just recalling.
Yeah. It just so
whatever
happened
he'd been programmed
to,
with,
you know, very similar to the Yorkshire Ripper, who God just told him to confess. Like so, there's a lot of indication that basically not only was he under mind control, but actually he was really just a decoy, so the real assassin could shoot John Lennon. There's a lot of reasons that we want John Lennon dead. Basically, like he was an active voice in he was definitely under FBI and CIA observation. There were rumors that he was going to start moving into politics, as far as I'm aware, and that would be more than enough reason to kill somebody as influential and as anti-establishment as John Lennon.
Loads and loads of tweets and comments. Listeners have been saying, go back to Fritz Springmeier and the work he's done on hypnosis. Yeah. They won't even remember what they've done when they've done it, as Neil has just said there. Really important stuff this. I just want to ask a question. We are jumping backwards and forwards, by the way. Mm-hmm. Before we do, Neil Sanders is on the line. neilsandersmindcontrol.com. That's the website. Your thoughts are not your own. They're ground breaking book. Neil is a master's in film studies, studied psychology, media production, and he's a qualified hypnotherapist. His work is cutting edge on this issue, it really is. Now, Chris Piper has sent me an email. How you doing, Chris? He says, Richie, ask Neil how the frequency change from 432 hertz to 440 hertz in standard tuning has affected us when we listen to music. What a question.
Do you know what? I'm ever so sorry because someone has asked me about this before and I just do not know. I don't know the answer to that. I'm really sorry. I know a lot of people do, but I don't understand it. All I know is that you have to have it at 440 hertz to tune a guitar to standard. Otherwise, it won't work. So that's all I know. So I'm really sorry. I just don't know.
No problem. That's good. Daniel Ford came back to say, McCartney's done virtual reality videos, wrote music for video games, featured robotic voices in his music and more. Mark Atwood, good evening, Mark. And also good evening to Neil Rushton, by the way, who's sent me some lovely emails over the last couple of days about our guests. How you doing, Neil? Mark Atwood tweets, any thoughts on Laurel Canyon?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously the go-to on this is Dave McGowan, and I think he's uncovered some incredible connections. I mean, even if you just sort of take them at face value, the amount of CIA connected people that just so happened to be there to create a scenario at the same time, just at the same time that all these other doctors and people like, you know, Alfred Hubbard and Owsley Stanley and Timothy Leary who all just so happened to be involved with people like Cord Meyer and other CIA operatives and Michael Hollingshead and people like that, just turning up, this coalition, this huge music change of youth identity and drug sort of expansion just also sort of happened at the same time. As I say, I really am a big fan of Dave McGowan's work. I think he's great. There were some other people that Dave McGowan didn't find. I think who was it? Was it Joni Mitchell? I think her father was involved through the Human Ecology Fund. And so she basically was connected to MKUltra Joan Byers. I do apologise. Joan Byers, basically, she actually claimed to be a victim of ritual abuse. And her father worked at Cornell University in a program that was funded by the Human Ecology Fund. And the Human Ecology Fund was the slush fund by which the MKUltra mind control project was able to be financed. So I don't think... I don't think he actually mentioned Joan Baez, although I could be completely wrong. But yeah, and Joni Mitchell as well. Her father was a Royal Canadian Air Force operative, and I don't think he mentioned her either. But I could be totally wrong about both of those. As I said, yeah, Dave McGowan's the man on that one.
It's really good stuff, Neil. We come, I suppose, inevitably to what's behind it. And I suppose for somebody listening to this for the very first time, they'll think, mm-hmm. well, we have to be prevented from ever becoming fully self-aware and conscious of who we are, what we're doing here, and why things are the way they are. And we're in a control system, and these are the tools of that control, right? That's what's going on. It seems very apparent to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the point. This is how civilization functions. That basically, you need to control people, and you also need to make people unaware that they're being controlled. Because if people know that they're being controlled, they will rebel against it. If people think that they've got like a right cushy little number going on, and that they're smarter than everyone else because they've got all the conduits and all the information, basically, you know, they're constantly being flattered at the same time being driven psychotic by having to keep up with all their friends on the social media sphere and stuff like that, it all gets very, very complicated. So, you know, but again, I strongly believe that this is all completely by design.
We had a brilliant chat last time you were on about the narcissism that was created in people by their exposure to social media. And we've been talking over the last couple of days, Neil, how that's bringing about a new and very dangerous form of self-censorship.
Yep.
Isn't it? Because
oh, yeah.
people are scared to explain themselves or offer an opinion for fear of being abused, called pretty awful names, mocked and ostracized. How serious is this, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Like, completely. I've thought about saying stuff and you know, weighed it out to see how the entire, you know, the lay of the land goes and stuff like that, to be quite honest. Because, yeah, people are rabid on the internet. What makes me strange is, like, there's a lot of sort of US military and UK military propaganda programs that are on the military. Let's start with Reddit, okay, which is everyone's favorite fact-filled forum at the minute, apparently. In 2014, it was shown that the most common posters from Reddit came from Elgin Air Force Base. Now, Elgin Air Force is a major hub for the Pentagon's domestic manipulation of the internet programs. Basically, Elgin Air Force was funding a series of research papers into how to establish majority issues on social media forums, influence conversation, and manipulate information. The Pentagon has got a counter reset program that can kill viral stories dead. This was revealed in 2014. When basically somebody hacked into the data of Reddit and discovered that basically, say, something ridiculous like 80% of the posts were coming from a Pentagon intelligence hub.
Oh, that brings us neatly to Pizzagate. Because
must we?
No, we mustn't. No, because we've talked a lot about it. And, you know, I always hold my water on mm-hmm. these things. I don't know whether there's any truth. I know the Podesta brothers. I know the emails, the coded emails, are strange, they're bizarre, and the media in America should be asking them to explain what these coded terms mean. There's no doubt about that, right?
Okay. Can I just start you off before I start talking about Pizzagate? I've got a bit about Pizzagate, because I want to make it absolutely clear before I preface this, because I'm going to get a ton of shit.
You won't get a ton of shit. Just ignore it. Right. The reason I'm only bringing it up is because you mentioned Reddit. And of course,
I walked into that one.
You didn't walk into it. No, it's vital. It's vitally important.
Well, let me preface this by saying, for a start, okay, I'm very, very aware of like elite paedophile groups. I've talked about it. I've written about it. I was talking about like the Crew Alexander paedophile scandal 4 years ago on television. I was talking about Jeremy Epstein in a book 4 years ago. So I know about all these. I'm very aware that they exist. I know about Johnny Gosch and Paul Bonassi and all these things. Right. Okay. Let me also preface this with a quote from somebody. I've known Jeff for 15 years. Terrific guy. He's a lot of fun to be with. He's even said that he likes beautiful women as much as I do. Many of them are on the younger side. No doubt about it. Jeffrey enjoys his social life. Do you know who that is?
Remind us.
President-elect Donald Trump
talking
about his good friend Jeffrey Epstein. Right, I'll just go into this basically because I'm very troubled by Pizzagate. I'm totally open to the possibility of it, but I also think that we should really take a step back and be open to the other possibility that this might be a setup. It's an entrapment project. What really troubles me about this, before I get into it, is that basically the media were talking about fake news at the end of October. At the beginning of November, WikiLeaks came out and they were talking about Epstein being connected to Clinton. That was dropped immediately. And then basically Pizzagate, the code was pushed on November the 3rd by two right-wing journalists who basically had a bone to pick with Clinton. This fell neatly into the sort of mainstream media's, like, it did two things. It distracted people from real cases, in my opinion, things like Epstein. It also made people be open to ridicule in the eyes of the mainstream media. And I also suggested a couple of weeks ago that this was possibly a tactic which is called stochastic terrorism, which is basically saying something to get people riled up to go and attack somebody and then basically demonize an entire media. So these are the things that sort of really started making me sort of really wary. Like the code from the emails, it came from an anonymous poster on 4chan and an anonymous poster on Reddit. That made me very, very concerned. It was first pushed by Jared Wyand on November the 30th, a racist, far-right, anti-Clinton Trump supporter. Basically, I get the impression that he possibly invented this code. There's no corroborating evidence to suggest that this code actually works. Even if we take a lot of the codes, the most damning ones, the handkerchief one, what that actually, if you take the code as literal, says that there's a handkerchief with a semen on it that appears to be a little girl related. Do you want me to post it back to your office? That's not really real. You know, that's it's strange. All of the cases is based on unproven assumptions. There's no actual direct line of evidence as far as I can see.
But you would agree with me, of course, and this is what I like. But the Podesta should be asked to explain them.
Oh, of course, absolutely. And 100%. I think the Epstein point and the Haiti point is real. And I think that it's very curious that that's been moved away from it. And like, I've got a bit of a thing here because obviously the problem with saying this is that everyone goes, yeah, but what about this? And what about this? And what about this? And what about this? And the other point is, again, this is not an immovable position. I'm completely, show me some evidence and I'll follow it. I'm just a bit wary that basically we're being set up. So basically, it was pushed firstly by Jared Wyand, who'd spent the entire election trying to smear Hillary Clinton. I think this was fed to him. And he went, yeah, brilliant. It's a week before the election. This is a way to smear Hillary Clinton. I'll go with it. I'll post this. The other person that posted it was David Seaman, who also had an axe to grind against Hillary Clinton because he'd just been sacked from the Huffington Post for reportedly writing fake articles about her. Whether you believe that or not, you know, the point is he had an axe to grind against her. So it was very, the week before the election when this came out, to me, it was like, that's why is no one looking at the political bias of this?
This is
why
journalism, Neil. You see, this is the essence of journalism. Now, to some, you will forever be a Jewish C, a word that rhymes with stunt. You're a shill. You're this and you're that. You're a paedophile protector and all of that monumental fucking bollocks that we have to put up with on a daily basis. What you're saying is journalism. What you're practicing is journalism. It's brilliant. You're holding your water, holding fire. Yeah, it might be possible that some paedophile ring was operating out of there. Who could say it isn't for a fact? But look at the extenuating circumstances around this, and also look at who is behind Reddit, and also look at the fact that satanic child abuse and murder is a common thing, and why wouldn't they consider throwing red herrings out there to make us all look like a bunch of lunatics?
Well, quite. I mean, I appreciate, and again, I'm not trying to have a go at anyone, but I've just sort of been going through the evidence and looking at it. Like, the most powerful evidence, I think, is the code. You know, the symbols that are on the FBI that denote paedophilia. Except I found that basically that came from a WikiLeaks dump in 2007. There's no corroborating evidence that it's actually taken from the FBI. It's not on the FBI's website, as far as I can see. And I can't find a single case proven to involve a paedophile ring that actually used those symbols. So the only evidence that this is what that is on that one page from a 2007 WikiLeaks dump. As we've already discussed, that basically, like, I'm totally open to it, but you need a corroborating case whereby you say, ah, but this was the other case where it was used, so where we can see the pattern emerging.
And while all of this is going on, while all the focus is on that, and yet again, for the vile, cowardly, anonymous trolls who don't have the balls to go on YouTube or Twitter using their real names, vile cowards, before you start jumping down our throats, nobody is saying that this is an absolute 100% guaranteed hoax. Questions are being asked, because while we're talking about this, while Neil and I are talking about this, children, and I'm not a sensationalist, are being raped, are being tortured, and are being trafficked around the world by these elite paedophiles that David Icke has been writing about for 25 years, and one or two others like him. It's going on, it's real. But this one, we can't say it's for real. And we have to look at everything, all the circumstances around it. We have to do that. Otherwise, we lose credibility. And then Absolutely. We don't reach people. And Neil, the reason you write your books and do your talks and make your videos is because you want to reach people that don't ordinarily hear this information. You don't want to be a broken record talking to the already converted. That's a waste of fucking time. We want to reach people who ordinarily think that guys like us are strange. And the way to do that is to be journalistic about it, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree. And again, I initially thought it was something strange, and I could be wrong. I'm totally open to changing my position. But going down each evidence, it all seems to rely on one another. And if you start to pick away at them, none of them are very strong. Like, let's take the $65,000 hot dogs, right? Okay. You know what they're talking about there? They're talking about a political fundraiser. And now, again, I'm not saying that this is a complete rebuttal of this position, but I looked into how much it costs to put on a fundraiser. And to make a dollar for the first $100,000 that you want to make, you have to spend 25 cents. After that, you have to spend 45 cents. Now, let's just take into account that every single political fundraiser that Trump and Clinton held on their campaign trail, they aimed to make a profit of $1 million, which means that they would have spent $250,000. So $65,000 isn't actually that much.
Do us a favour, mate. Come back in the spring, will you? Time is right up on us. We're up against it. I've got to take a break, and I've more or less got to wrap up. I want to mention again, Neil's website is neilsandersmindcontrol.com. Your Thoughts Are Not Your Own is the book. It's an absolutely terrific book. It's peerless when it comes to this particular issue and the issues we've discussed tonight. I've loved having you back, my friend. I really have. And I mean it when I say in the spring, let's get you back on mid to late February. And I think next time we bring you on, we'll do a special. We'll do the entire programme.
Well, that would be lovely. That's fabulous. Thank you very, very much. I'm sorry if I've been a bit croaky and a bit sort of bleary.
No, you sound great. You sound great. Oh,
sound husky like Madge from Neighbours. I've got a touch of the flu, I'm afraid. But thank you very much for having me on, Richie.
It was an honour, Neil. Thanks so much. Neil Sanders, mindcontrol.com. That's the website. The book is Your Thoughts Are Not Your Own. And you heard Neil on Wednesday's Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association, of course, as always, with davidicke.com.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Do not risk putting another pound in your bank account until you've heard this message. It's Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my brand new book, The Road to Ruin. Visit theroadtoruin.co.uk for full details now. Inside, I uncover the financial elite's secret ICE-9 plan to take full control of your hard-earned cash. To see how, visit theroadtoruin.co.uk right away. It's not too late to prepare. Claim your free copy at theroadtoruin.co.uk today.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
And you're welcome back. You're welcome back. Well, it was nice to learn in the last couple of minutes that Dr. Rich Tyrrell. From NASA and positively enjoyed being on the program, and will come back again and talk to us in the new year. If you missed that program, it is going to be available, the podcast, in around about, I reckon, 20 minutes time, around about 20 minutes, the podcast will be online. And we will, of course, put the program on the loop on the player, so it's playing all the time on davidite.com and Fab Radio 2. Overnight, those repeats begin at 11 p.m. GMT. That's 11 p.m. GMT. I've really enjoyed the programme. I've really enjoyed having Rich Tyrrell on the programme. I suppose it's no big secret to many of you how much I love and admire my friend David Icke. So it's a wonderful thing to observe his happiness and I suppose his excitement at how many, you know, system-trained and taught and educated men and women are asking the questions about our reality and what's going on. So that's pretty special as well. So Rich Tyrrell was great. And Neil Sanders is an absolute breath of fresh air as well. Neil Sanders, mindcontrol.com. Dr. Wayne Squire will be on the programme tomorrow. She's a famous neuropathologist. I'm sure you know all about her. She was struck off because she began questioning her own testimony when she testified in shaken baby syndrome cases. She re-evaluated the science and said that it was flawed and wrong, and she was struck off. Hundreds of scientists and doctors said, well, something very wrong with that, and she had her license to practice medicine restored only a short time ago. She's going to come on and chat with us tomorrow. And Jim Rickards, who is a terrific author, financial journalist and analyst, who was on the programme a month or so ago. You'll be hearing, if you have been hearing Jim's ad, he's giving his book away free at the moment, is Jim. Jim returns to the programme tomorrow, Thursday, so it's a pretty busy show. I do want to say one thing. I want to say a massive thanks to Fred Fairbrass from Right Said Fred, who, true to his word, very late in the day today, did secure tickets for me to see Rod Stewart, somebody I've always wanted to see. He's live in Manchester tomorrow. And I was going to wiggle a deal where I would go to it and then do programmes Friday and Saturday and Sunday morning to make up for my absence. But it was late in the day and we'd already booked the guests for tomorrow. So I won't be going to see Rod. But I want to say a big thanks to Fred Fairbass from Right Said Fred, who's become a good mate and will be on the programme again soon. He was on the programme 2 years ago, amazingly. Fair play to Fred for doing that and putting himself out there and securing those tickets. I felt very guilty in eventually turning them down, but Fred didn't mind. Absolutely lovely man. The interviews with Dr. Catherine Horton, who blew so many of your minds on yesterday's programme, the Oxford physicist, those interviews are all on YouTube.com now. Thanks to Simon Stewart for that. Thanks to my producer, Claire Calvey, to Aaron Calland and to Jean-Anne Crowley in Dublin, in Ballyoaclea. I have been Richie Allen. Thanks for listening to Wednesday's programme. Look after yourselves and one another. I'll be back with you again tomorrow, Thursday, without doubt, at 8 p.m. GMT. Bye for now. See you tomorrow.